Hi guys, today I have another short discussion with Dr. Bhargava to place before you. I had made a podcast earlier with Dr. Bhargava, who is a top Indian biologist and an expert on genetic engineering. But in that earlier podcast, I did not cover some key elements, and so I called him back again to check on them. These are to do with his contribution towards the very term genetic engineering, and specifically what happens when genes are transferred from one species to another, the defect in the technology, and what collateral damage it does to the receiving genome. I had not asked specifically about that. I had also not asked about his involvement in the first batch of genetically engineered anything being made, for instance, in India. And so I called him up and asked him these questions, starting with, was he involved in using the term genetic engineering for the first time? So over to my talk with Dr. Bhargava.
Yes, in 1973, in a syndicated article in India, I used the term genetic engineering for the first time. At that time, I didn't realize that this was for the first time. Then a colleague of mine discovered that article 20 years later. And mind you, that's in 1973, so in early 1990s. And she decided to find out who used the term for the first time. So she wrote to many people, including Francis Crick and Jim Watson, Nobel Prize winners, Paul Berg. And finally, the editor of Nature, John Maddox, said that it was used for the first time in Britain a few months earlier than I had used it in India. So I suppose the credit for the first use should go jointly to us, for first mention of the term.
I see.
Then further research was done, and it turned out that Ronald Hotchkiss, another Nobel Prize winner, and another person, a colleague of his, had actually used the term in the late 1940s, but in a completely different context. Oh. So in the present context, this term was used for the first time in India by me, and for the first time anywhere by two of us. And I also chaired the first National Committee on Genetic Engineering and biotechnology in India.
So, when was that, sir?
My chairing this committee was in the 1980s.
I see.
So, and my laboratory was the first one to actually use genetic engineering, the technology of genetic engineering in India. And this laboratory, the CCMB, was also the first to have a product which was the first genetically engineered product in the Indian market. Was developed in our lab. This is the hepatitis B vaccine.
Can you repeat, what was the product developed in the lab?
The product was hepatitis B vaccine, and it was developed by one of my former PhD students for Shanta Biotech.
Oh, I see.
Shanta Biotech was the company which sponsored that. The work was done in our lab by K.S. and Prasad, who got his PhD with me and who was the first one who was trained in genetic engineering in the country. The reason, the problem with the technology is as follows, that when you put a transgene, a foreign gene, in an organism, after all, what is gene? Gene is a DNA. This gene breaks down. 10 to 15% of this DNA actually breaks down. And the broken, the products of the breakdown, so it means fragments of DNA, they go and attach themselves randomly in the genome of the host. And they can shut off proteins, they can start making new proteins, and that is the inherent risk in technology. And we say that you can actually show this by doing what we call proteomics and transcriptomics analysis. But today the technology is available. 20 years ago it was not available. So, and it has never been done. Although there are some papers, But all the papers that where they have actually done this on an experimental basis show that the number of proteins change. But nobody has looked at the what the nature of these proteins is and what functions they are involved. So one of my submissions has been, and this is one of the 30 tests that I've said I've gone on record to say this should be done. But they've not been done with any GM product which is in the market. So out of these 30 tests, which include proteomics and transcriptomics, only about 5 or 6 tests have been done, and they too have been done by the company itself and never been independently checked. In the United States, even these tests have not been done, because there they only look at what we call substantial equivalence.
And with that, we will end the podcast today. Actually, the discussion went on for a lot longer, and Dr. Bhargava explained to me how this fragmentation takes place. And there is actually a gene cassette where the desired gene from the other organism, along with marker genes and other bits and pieces that holds the thing together, are usually packaged, and it's called a gene cassette. And that fragments and pieces go flying everywhere, and all kinds of unintended consequences happen. And the fact that any two results from two experiments do not show the same results, so randomly they fragment and attach and so on, anywhere between 10 to 20, 30% of the genome may be altered in some way. And when I ask how do they get consistency of, let's say, how do they get Roundup ready if it is so random, then how do they get a consistent rate? They say they filter it out. If they do these gene transfers, and then out of, say, 1,000 pieces, they find a few that matches their desired traits, and then they multiply those. But what they don't do is check what other damages and alterations have been done to the entire genome system. So it's an extremely imperfect science, and it's full of dangers, and they are not even being tested. And he even named the instruments that are involved for testing. It can be done. It costs a bit of money, but it can be done, and they are not being done. So anyway, with that, I will end today's podcast, and see you guys next time.